I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV Plus.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the worlds of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
All right, bunch of headlines when it comes to COVID today. Citibank, Tim, you pointed this out just before we got going today, requiring all U.S. employees to be vaccinated against COVID as a condition of their employment, citing new orders from President Biden.
I think that we're going to start seeing more and more of this from the big companies. Also, Florida suing the Biden administration over vaccine mandates for federal contractors. This is the latest in a wave of Republican pushbacks against the president's orders to fight off the pandemic. Closer to home where we are, in New York City, the city saying it will temporarily outlaw days off for sanitation workers as needed ahead of an anticipated employee shortage stemming from a vaccine mandate going into effect next week.
We talk about supply chains. The U.S. government has bought an additional 50 million doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine in a push to secure supply for kids. All right, let's get to it with Dr. Anna Durbin, professor of international health, director of the Center for Immunization Research at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, supported by Michael R. Bloomberg, founder of Bloomberg LP and Bloomberg Philanthropies. Dr. Durbin on the phone once again from Baltimore. Dr. Durbin, nice to have you back here on Bloomberg Radio. It's all about kids. What do you make of the progress so far?
I think it's really excellent. I mean, I think it's good news that we have a vaccine that will likely get approval from the CDC in their meeting next week. As we saw, it was shown to be safe and efficacious, and the FDA approved the use of the vaccine in kids. It is a lower dose, which I think is important to know because these kids are much smaller and don't need as much vaccine as adults, and that means that the side effects are less severe in kids, which is good news.
Dr. Durbin, I was at the doctor yesterday. I was talking to a woman there who is a healthcare worker. We were talking about our family. She said that her kids are over the age of 5. And I said, that's great. They can get the vaccine very soon. And she said, I'm not going to get it for them now. I'm going to hold off on it. What would you say to parents who want to hold off and wait for more information?
Well, what I would say is this. We know that the group now that's probably most susceptible to COVID is kids younger than 12 because they haven't had a vaccine available. We know that the virus can infect kids. We know that they can become symptomatic. It's true they aren't hospitalized to the high degree that particularly older adults are, but we do see severe disease in kids. We see multi-system inflammatory syndrome in kids. We see kids who are hospitalized who go to the ICU, and we don't really understand why, some kids may be affected more than others. I would try to reassure her that there is a lot of safety data of the vaccine, that these vaccines have been studied in young kids, that the safety profile looks excellent, and that we can prevent more transmission of the virus when kids are vaccinated, when they're in schools. It just provides greater safety for the population, the more people that we get vaccinated.
So there's a headline. We've got a story on the Bloomberg. Vaccinated people also spread the Delta variant. This is according to a year-long study. So we're talking about people inoculated against COVID-19 are just as likely to spread the Delta variant of the virus to contacts in their household as those who have not had shots. This is according to some new research. It was a study, a year-long study, 621 people in the UK with mild COVID-19. And scientists found that their peak viral load was similar regardless of vaccination status, according to a paper published today in the Lancet Infectious Diseases Medical Journal. People are going to see that and probably seize on it and say, see, I don't need to get the vaccine. Help us here.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of really important things to keep in mind. When we look at PCR, when we look at measurement of the virus by PCR, it doesn't tell you whether that virus is alive or dead. It just tells you that there's pieces of the virus. We do know from studies that people who are vaccinated shed the virus for a shorter period of time. So they transmit the virus for a shorter period of time, and they actually transmit less live virus than people who are unvaccinated. It is true that vaccinated people can transmit the virus. We've seen breakthrough.
Dr. infection. Durbin, forgive me, just because we have been nuts, and I know our audience is nuts about this, but Facebook is rebranding their company. The name change will be Meta, M-E-T-A. Facebook changing its name to Meta, M-E-T-A. We're going to get back to that in just a moment. But again, it's something that we know our audience has been waiting for. We were expecting that name change as they host that event out there at Facebook headquarters. We're going to get back to it in just a moment. Forgive me, Dr. Durbin. Please finish your thought.
No. I was just going to say, it's true that there are breakthrough infections in vaccinated people, but we know that vaccinated people, even though they can shed the virus or transmit the virus, it's for a shorter period of time, and it does provide protection. The other thing that I would say is that how much virus you shed also is dependent on how ill you are. And we know that vaccines reduce the severity of illness incredibly. 90% of people hospitalized now are unvaccinated. So there are a lot of factors that go into it. There are studies that have shown that vaccinated people are less likely to infect family members who are unvaccinated. So, just having recovery of the virus by PCR isn't the whole story. And we know from multiple studies that vaccination reduces transmission.
Dr. Durbin, thank you so much, as always, over at Johns Hopkins, Bloomberg School of Public Health, on the phone from Baltimore. All right, we've got it. The name change for Facebook, it is Meta, M-E-T-A, and this obviously plays into the new focus, or a big focus at the company, the metaverse. Let's get to Tom Giles. He's Bloomberg Technology Executive Editor, joining us from our Bloomberg San Francisco Bureau. Tom, we've got it.
Yeah, they finally unveiled the new name, as you said. It's Meta. This is really about Mark Zuckerberg and the rest of the executives at Facebook trying to rebrand, reimagine, get you to think about Facebook in a different way. It's really emphasizing their planned multi-billion dollar bet on the metaverse. This is this immersive world. Think of it as a 3D worldwide web that they want to be at the ground level of creating. And they want you to think about their company as really a pioneer in this space. They just spent an hour talking about the new hardware and software and other tools that they're created to give users the opportunity to immerse themselves in this thing called the metaverse. And
did you just chuckle there?
I did. It was a fascinating study of kind of what they're thinking about. It was really a trip inside the heads of Mark Zuckerberg and the other executives there. And they're taking it very seriously. And it's a big, bold and risky bet that they're taking. They're going to spend billions of dollars over the next 5 to 10 years to build this out.
How do they monetize this? I mean, I was watching part of this presentation as I was mm-hmm. preparing for our program today.
Oh, Tim, you're so silly. Monetization.
But that's what investors care about. And
first, you got to get the eyeballs, right?
Well, I got to tell you, I even after watching that, I like life as it is and don't necessarily want to live in the metaverse or spend any time in the metaverse. How do they convince us to do that, and how do they make money doing it?
Right. That's going to be a big challenge. So to answer your first question about the monetization, they are talking about all kinds of tools that you are going to be able to use. Spent a lot of time talking about e-commerce. So, we've seen lots of big tech companies, Amazon comes to mind, that have been able to monetize the way you buy and sell stuff, virtually. That's one thing. They're also gaming. They talked about Grand Theft Auto being one of the games that they're going to sell. And certainly, as you look at wearing headsets, immersing yourself in these worlds, whether it's through a VR virtual reality experience or an AR experience, you can imagine that there's going to be advertising sales. They didn't talk a lot about that. But I think that they will find ways to absolutely monetize this, although, probably not right at the outset.
Hey, Tom, I'm struck by something that I saw Shanali Basak, our colleague on Bloomberg TV right now, just tweet. She said that Zuckerberg said, from now on, we're going to be metaverse first, not Facebook first. It really makes me think back to 2012 when Mark Zuckerberg said that Facebook was going to be a mobile-first company, and it emerged that he was making everybody only use their phones to access Facebook to build a mobile product. Fast forward where we are now, this is a company that is that really succeeded when it came to mobile and really surprised investors by holding on to that.
Yeah, I remember it. And, you know, at the time of their IPO, one of the things that really tripped them up for those first scary several months of their publicly after their debut was that they hadn't mastered mobile. But as you said, that's something that they really tackled. They got us all or all their users or many of their users to experience Facebook on the smartphone. And now they want to kind of move beyond that. And they want to be what's interesting about, you know, kind of making you think about Facebook differently. Facebook's name has really been, the brand has really been tarnished by all of the things mm-hmm. that we and others have been writing about for weeks and months and years, which is the preponderance of harmful content, whether it's hate speech, whether it's dis or misinformation, anti-vax conspiracy theories. The list goes on and on and on of the ways that Facebook has become a place that we associate with a lack of safety and a lack of protection. They want to start kind of over, and this is how they're going to do it.
Right. Hey, you know, Mark Zuckerberg putting out a letter. I'm just reading through it. As I wrote in our original founder's letter, quote, "We don't build services to make money. We make money to build better services." It's interesting, though, Tom, it comes at a time, just quickly, 20 seconds, right? As you say, this company is being looked at very, very closely for its impact negatively on society.
Absolutely. And you have a lot of lawmakers out there really taking a jaundiced view of Facebook and the things that they say. The stock is up, interestingly. So somebody likes what he's selling right now.
Well, it could have been Facebook 2.0. That wouldn't have been so good. Tom Giles, you are amazing. Thank you for breaking it down and just making sense when it comes to Facebook's history. We're going to talk and continue this conversation on Facebook's new name. It's Meta. Ed Ludlow will be joining us from Menlo Park. He's on the ground there at Facebook headquarters. You're listening to Bloomberg Radio.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic. From Bloomberg Radio.
A must read in the new issue of Bloomberg Business Week by Priya Nan and Mark Bergen. It's about a company called GoGuardian, the leading developer of educational tech software. And I guess, Tim, to be fair, to be transparent, it's really about kind of educational surveillance software.
That's right. Big Teacher is watching. Spyware business sneaks into schools. Joe Weber is editor at Bloomberg Business Week. He's with us in the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio. Priya Nan is venture capital reporter for Bloomberg News. She joins us from San Francisco. Joel, what is the software GoGuardian?
So it's one of a few that have become incredibly popular since the beginning of the pandemic, where, you know, if you had a kid and the kid was in school, maybe, or not in school, but at home, there was just this proliferation of devices all of a sudden. So kids had iPads and laptops in a way that maybe they didn't always have before. And if it came from a school, if it was a Department of Education issued thing, chances are the school wanted to make sure that it could keep an eye on what the kid was doing. And now these companies have really boomed. GoGuardian is the one that Priya dug into for the story. What do you think a kid is looking at during school other than school, right?
Well, you know if you have GoGuardian.
Yeah, that's right. So it also raises all kinds of privacy issues. So Priya, what did you learn as you dug into this story?
That's right. So the pandemic, I mean, every school that hadn't given kids a laptop or a tablet of some sort, so many schools were forced to thrust these things into kids' hands. And when they did that, they wanted to make sure they could ensure that kids weren't searching for, I guess for our radio listeners, I'll say problematic stuff on their school computers, right, when they're giving them access to the Internet. So administrators at schools, principals, teachers we spoke with for this story, they all love this. Teachers say that even in the classroom when they're not, you know, remote, now that they're back, it helps them when they want kids to look at maybe a worksheet of some sort or have an exam open that's online, which is much easier to grade for them. And then they can make sure that the kid only has the certain tabs open that they've said are okay during class. So a math teacher can block YouTube, for example, during their class. If they see a kid open another tab with a game or something like that, they can close out that tab immediately for them from their own computer at their desk. And teachers think that this is a way to, like, you know, actually be able to focus on teaching, right? If you can block all the other stuff so you know the kid can't access anything else on their computer.
Kind of sounds like the Bloomberg firewalls, just putting it out there. But we understand why. We have a lot of information to protect here. The schools decide, though, right, what to block on kids' computers.
The schools decide what to block on kids' computers. But the interesting thing is that the schools can also decide to turn on a feature that allows them to, if a kid's logged into their school account on a personal computer at home, GoGuardian can still continue tracking, monitoring, et cetera, while the kid is logged into that school account. Now, not every school turns this on. GoGuardian wouldn't give us a figure on how many schools that they're involved with have turned this on, but there was protest in Montclair, New Jersey over this. And parents wondered, you know, where does the tracking end then if this can happen on a personal device?
Priya, one thing that you explore in the piece is just about the role of computers in school, because for years Silicon Valley and even Mark Zuckerberg in Newark almost a decade ago wanted to help connect classrooms. And I'm wondering what you learned and what you can tell us about the role of computers in school. Did they reach a turning point during the pandemic because of remote learning?
That's right. So what struck me about companies like GoGuardian is how much scale they've been able to achieve so far, right? Just how many schools across the country they reach and how many students across the country they reach. GoGuardian, for example, they're one of the biggest companies that makes these kind of tracking tools, and their reach is a potential 23 million students or more. Entire states have signed up, like Delaware and West Virginia, giving access to all the schools in their states, which means the school can decide whether or not they want to use these tools. But, you know, New York City has signed up, largest school district in the country. So that's what struck us as quite different from a lot of the other efforts in education technology, right? I mean, a bunch of Googlers started a company called Alt School a couple years back. It ended up shutting down the schools. It started, the schools had like 3D printers and all this fancy high-tech stuff, but then they got out of the business of operating schools, and they only even had, you know, not that many, nothing at this scale. And the Zuckerberg-Newark relationship, that was just Newark, right? It wasn't across the country. So this really struck us as something that, you know, even though the pandemic really gave them a big boost in popularity, it doesn't seem like this kind of monitoring technology is going away now that things are back in person, and they have achieved just a much larger base of users across the country.
I got to say, it seems pretty basic to put a little firewall on an education device and limit what kids might be able to access and give some teachers ability to see what they're looking at. What are the numbers like? How lucrative of a business idea is this?
GoGuardian, they themselves charge about $5 per student per product that a school or school district wants
to
sign up.
That's more than the school lunch, I think, is getting, by the way.
Oh, yikes.
They've got multiple products going on, too. There's like a you know, a whole host of tools for teachers specifically, a host of tools for administrators, a host of tools to kind of assign devices to different kids and like track where they are. So it's dependent on like how they set up, you know, the service. But yeah, $5 per student at minimum, right?
So, okay, one of the most searched for things, it turns out, when students are on GoGuardian is how to get around GoGuardian. How do you get around it?
You know, so actually we asked the company about this, and we're like, hey, you know, we heard that kids do constantly search like how to get around your tech, and their engineers watch those videos too, and if they see something, they, you know, close it up. But it's not something they seem to be that worried about. They think they've got things pretty locked down.
I just think it's funny, on a day where we just had Facebook getting a new name, Meta, because we know they're focusing on the metaverse, and that actually with GoGuardian, there is a penalty box, right? Kind of a virtual one that kids can be put in. And I just think you can see a melding of the metaverse, right? The kids are put in like a penalty metaverse.
I'm remembering the kids I went to school with who were in that box now, you know, like they probably are still in it. You know,
but. It's just crazy like how it's all going to meld together. Is this a company that's going to probably go public at some time, just quickly?
You know, earlier this year, they raised $200 million, putting their valuation at over $1 billion. So given the recent fundraising, who knows, right?
Yeah.
But they have a lot of money right now, at least, to expand.
Unbelievable and fascinating and deep dive. There's so much to this story. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Bloomberg News venture capital reporter Priya Anand joining us on the phone from San Francisco, along with Bloomberg Businessweek editor Joel Weber. What did you think of Meta?
Roofline in the magazine coming out now. Oh, that shipped yesterday is Facebook's Meta pivot. I feel like I should be in the gambling universe.
I was just going to say.
You called it, Joel.
Yeah.
Ahead of the curve, man. All right, everybody. We got to run. Joel Weber, thank you so much. Business Week editor,
pleasure.
Of course. And check out that new issue. It is on newsstands, on the Bloomberg, and at businessweek.com.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
So it's official. Meta, formerly known as Facebook, the artist formerly known as Facebook.
Are you going to keep calling it Facebook, or are you going to start calling it Meta from day one?
I mean, technically, it's still trading right under Facebook. It doesn't start trading under the new ticker until December 1st. So I guess it's going to be kind of one of those Google / Alphabet, like, you know, that confusion that we went through initially when they made the name change.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. And fortunately now, Ed Ludlow is joining us. He's West Coast correspondent at Bloomberg News. He's on site from Facebook headquarters in Menlo Park, California. I believe he's at One Hacker Way in front of what was, until today, a famous Facebook-like sign, thumbs up, that you're seeing on YouTube right now. But now the sign has changed. Ed, when did they pull the cover off that brand new sign that you're standing in front of?
9 seconds.
Wow.
After Mark Zuckerberg announced it.
Wow.
9. And it was amazing. Over my shoulder, you know, they're standing there. It had this temporary canvas over it. And whoosh, they just pull the canvas off the sign. It's that famous sign everyone knows, right, for our radio audience as well, with the thumbs up like symbol. And it's changed now to this Meta symbol. But what you guys were discussing in the intro is the most important part. What changes? And really, this is a change in name only. No change to Facebook's corporate structure and no change to the names of its properties, right? Facebook, the website and app, stays the same. WhatsApp the same. Instagram the same. And many had speculated that they might form a new entity, restructure with a holding company like Alphabet did, but that wasn't the case.
So what's the significance of this? Is this a company, just like when they were late to mobile but quickly pivoted to mobile, is this a company realizing the future is going to be different going forward and we're going to pivot now and we're going to, you know, telegraph that very clearly to the world? What are we as investors, the stock's up 3% now, so we did see a kick up on this news. What are we supposed to take away from this, Ed?
To be fair, Zuckerberg and other executives have been talking about the metaverse for some time, about how for Facebook, the metaverse is the future where we interact with one another virtually, not just for simply gaming, but during his presentation, Zuckerberg talked about e-commerce, about conducting business meetings through virtual and augmented reality using the Oculus headsets. He talks about healthcare using the Oculus headset, exercising in virtual spaces with others. Imagine a Peloton class that is virtual. I can't quite get my head around that. But what has been made so clear about the Facebook equity story in the quarter just gone this week and the prior quarter is its vulnerability to those Apple iOS changes. And by extension, its dependence on ad revenues. And we know that they bought Instagram. We know that they bought WhatsApp, but they've found it hard to monetize those. And really, this is Facebook, Zuckerberg saying, this is the first big step for us towards a future where we monetize through our virtual reality investment in Oculus, which was 2014.
It also has made me think a lot over the last... Go ahead, Carol.
No, you know what I'm thinking, though? I'm like watching the video that Mark Zuckerberg put out here. And at a time where we are talking about the world needing greater transparency, we're now talking about creating, you know, an alt reality that could mask so much. And so I guess I'm trying to get my head around it. Just call me a purist. What can I say?
Yeah. Well, one of the big, big points that Facebook stressed was that privacy is going to be central to this, right? They said that there will be the same parental controls, the same privacy policies in Horizon, the app or platform that the metaverse will exist in, or the, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But also that there will be no substantive changes to data, to user data, how they handle it. I think those are big questions. One hypothesis put forward by Wall Street is that if Facebook had gone further and had done a holding company where each individual business unit was separate and isolated, it might have given them some reprieve or insulation from antitrust interest, right, from regulators, but they didn't do that. And really, likes of Reid Hoffman have raised this question, right? This doesn't change anything for Facebook's existing problems.
Right. What I was going to say is almost 20 years ago to the day, Philip Morris in the U.S. changed its name to Altria. And they did that partly to disassociate the name of the company from cigarettes and from the danger that cigarettes have caused the world and the U.S. And I'm wondering if this changes anything for regulators or makes them think at all differently about the company.
Yeah, I don't have the answer to that. And I know that's a bit of a cop out. But, you know, as I said, it's a change in name only. You know, Zuckerberg and Nick Clegg, who's the vice president of corporate affairs, you know, the former British deputy prime minister, just stressed that, look, we are aware of the criticisms that people level at Facebook. Zuckerberg actually said there's no good time for Facebook to set out its plan for the future because people will raise questions about what it's doing with its present issues. But he said there's no time like the present. You know, they acknowledge all of the criticism around content moderation, about the safety of the platform for children. But at the end of the day, as I said, this is about diversifying, moving away from the ad platform that we know, the core blue Facebook.com platform,
right,
to a future where people engage differently with one another.
Well, and to be fair, we are now having a very different conversation about Facebook slash Meta right now because we're talking about the name change and the focus of the company. And if I look at Wall Street, you know, investors are cool. More than 82% of the analysts that cover it put a buy rating. 51 of the analysts that we survey here at Bloomberg have a buy rating. 8 holds, 3 sells. I mean, overwhelmingly, like, investors seem to be okay about all of it, Ed.
We're talking about a company that is going to record $118 billion in fiscal 21, according to estimates, that regularly posts top and bottom line growth that is in the very high double digits. There was disappointment in this quarter. Why? Because we saw the brunt of the impact from the Apple privacy tracking changes, right? That was clear and there was commentary about it on the call. But at the end of the day, this is an incredibly high margin business that is setting out the future where it's not dependent on that high margin business. It's going into other areas that it's confident that can generate revenue. One real quick one, Zuckerberg said by the end of the decade, the metaverse may reach 1 billion people, but it will generate in the region of hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue. That gives you a sense of scale, right? It's going to be a long, long time before this is the core of the business, but it's the first big step to diversifying.
Ed, just very, very briefly, 20 seconds, how do they monetize the metaverse?
Right. Two ways. Hardware, Oculus, brand new headset announced today, high-end, expensive, high level of functionality. Second way, services. Think about video games, Roblox, Minecraft. You buy things within the game. And that's indeed what Facebook wants to do. But it wants to do e-commerce. It wants to do business-to-business interactions, meetings, so you don't take an airplane. And yeah, as I said, healthcare was a really interesting take for me.
Another headline crossing from that event, Meta unifying payments, financial services under Facebook's Novi brand. That was the brand name, I think, created back in 2020 for kind of the digital wallet that they created. Ed Ludlow, be careful. Get off that highway. We're worried about you outside Facebook / Meta headquarters. You're listening to Bloomberg Radio.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
I'm driving in my car.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no. This is not a toy.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
You drive me crazy.
It's the question that drives us.
You drive me crazy.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, just about 10 and a half minutes left from the end of trading on this Thursday, this Friday's eve, and bouncing around, but it looks like we're taking a little bit of a leg up here. Those major equity averages near our highs of the day, certainly on the S&P and the NASDAQ. NASDAQ, once again, the outperformer this whole week is about those big tech names, and that includes some of the results we're going to get after the closing bell. We have Amazon, we have Apple, what am I missing?
Starbucks, coffee, Starbucks. But not tech.
Not really, you know, high
they
tech.
They would call themselves tech with the online ordering.
There is an
apps.
App.
Apps, the app is huge, and there will be a lot of questions about the app.
Well, someone who knows about all these brands is our next guest. Eric Clark is portfolio manager at Rational Dynamic Brands Fund. His fund, by the way, continued to beat just about all of its peers over the last 5 years, up on average 22% annually, putting his fund in the 96th percentile, according to Bloomberg data. He's back with us on the phone from San Diego. By the way, top holdings in the fund include Alphabet and Apple, which, as we said, Apple reports after the close. Google already reported.
Google already, earlier this week.
Trying to keep it straight.
Amazon too.
Yeah, exactly. Eric, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Carol?
Doing well. So let's talk about, first of all, can we just go to a tweet? Because you put out a tweet, and you tweeted about the name change of Facebook to Meta. And you said, what happens in a few years when we all realize we actually like being outside and enjoying real life? What happens? Do you have some thoughts about this one?
Well, you know, probably about 3 years ago, I was constantly saying, you know, in my opinion, Facebook has a real brand problem, and it stems from a lot of their business practices, et cetera. So, I mean, on one hand, it's good to see them finally address that that's an issue. You know, they've told people in their earnings release that they're going to spend like $10 billion on the development of this metaverse through CapEx. And so, you know, a brand name change focused on the future driver of growth is that's logical, and it makes a lot of sense. I'm just skeptical about what the metaverse looks like and what kind of revenue can be generated. And, you know, my cynical nature, even from my tweet, that's great. If I go in the metaverse, am I going to be advertised to death there too? So in the real world and on the metaverse, I don't know. I don't love Facebook in general, so I'm probably not the best guy, you know, to opine on the positive parts of Facebook.
Do you hold any Facebook?
We do not. No, it's been a good trade for us. We traded it, you know. I don't know. I put a little note to my team saying, hey, you know, we're about 8% of the way from the $1 trillion mark, and it'd be shocking if we didn't kiss that level, just like Tesla did the other day. And when that happens, if that happens, we're out, and that's what we did, and we haven't been back since.
You know what's interesting to staying on Facebook is the idea that the company is going all in on this. They're saying, hey, we believe in that this is the future so much, we're changing our name. What if it doesn't work? What if we don't want to be in that metaverse, like you said?
I think that it certainly changes the risk profile of the business. And you know, that's okay. You know, that's their decision to make. It's such an unknown. And I do see there's some real value in the metaverse for work and for business.
Right.
It's already there with gaming, and there's social commerce happening inside of gaming already. So in some way, it's just an extension of that. But the other part of that, what that actually looks like, what the demographic of people that are going to be in the metaverse is, clearly I'm 53. I'm, you know, call me a dinosaur. I like the real world. I like the smell, touch, and taste. I don't know that you're going to be able to overcome that in the metaverse. So
right.
This is clearly a next generation demographic story. And, you know, we'll have to just see how they build this thing. And they're certainly, they've gone all in from a CapEx perspective.
Well, if I go all dystopian on everybody, if we continue on this trajectory when it comes to our environment and climate, we won't be allowed to be outside. And so metaverse. No, I'm sorry, but if you think about it, that we might need to be inside, and that all we will have are metaverses in terms of safety. So there you have it. Sorry, dark day on
Thursday.
It's
not that out of this world. There are parts of the world that
already
where you don't want to be outside because of pollution.
All right. So, okay, Eric, let's get away from the dark
side. On that
note,
Eric.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch, you do own Amazon. They're going to be reporting after the close. We're going to be all over it. We want to see what's going on with e-commerce. You know, might the web, Amazon Web Services, take care of any weakness within the e-commerce part of their business? What are you expecting? What is it that you like and continue to like about this company and this brand?
Well, I mean, the stock in general hasn't really done much for the last 12 months. I don't love any stock that goes hot into a print. But, you know, overall, the thing is largely underperformed because they're in their spending mode. And when, you know, when they spend, they're hiring, you know, an absurd amount of workers with higher pay. So certainly one side of the business is going to be, you know, hire and spend. So a lot of big expenses. But, you know, the history of Amazon is when we spend for a period of time, then we reap the benefits of that spend in forward quarters. So, you know, I don't really know one quarter to the next, but I'm sure AWS is probably going to be strong. The trends on that side of the business will be good, maybe to offset some of the CapEx and the spending that's happening on the other side of the business. But, you know, I love the business. I love the brand. So it's just a buy on dip for me. It's just, it's been a top holding, and, you know, you don't love it that it hasn't performed real well for for a year or so, but it tends to do that. It ramps up and then it tends to consolidate for a while and then it ramps up again.
Do you love both the e-commerce? Do you love the Amazon Web Services? Do you love all the business just quickly?
Yeah, I love it all. Love it all. I mean, it serves different markets, and, you know, if you're a small business, you hate Amazon, but the reality is it served a purpose. And we all love it even more after COVID. So we're that much more loyal to the business. And their logistics is no joke.
Okay, just 30 seconds left. Eric, Apple, also one of your top holdings. They're reporting after the bell, too. What are you looking for?
Yeah, I mean, could see some softness because of the supply issues. I mean, demand is not a problem for their products, and particularly the iPhone 13. It's just hard to come by. So any misses that come today will just be made up when they have some supply. So any dips on that one, I'll be aggressive and buy that too.
Any dips you'll be buying. So any dips on that or Amazon you'll be buying?
Correct.
All right. Good to know. Really love it. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And fun to follow your tweets as well. Eric Clark, portfolio manager of the Rational Dynamic Brands Fund, top performer in the past 5 years, joining us on the phone from San Diego.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.